Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. If you like beer, this is a great time to be living in New England. In fact, this has been pretty friendly territory for beer drinkers for a long, long time. The Pilgrims first dropped anchor at Plymouth because they were running out of beer.
A century or so later, the American revolutionary Samuel Adams called on his fellow countrymen to brew and drink local beer as a way to, quote, stick it to England. And more recently, after a brief downturn during the Great Recession, New England breweries are booming. They're growing in number and stature. Today, there are some 200 breweries across the region, most of them small craft shops.
Lauren Clark calls it an embarrassment of riches. Clark writes about beer. She even tried her hand as a brewer. And she's the author of the new book, Crafty Bastards, Beer in New England from the Mayflower to Modern Day. And Lauren Clark, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So your book is full of information about the history of brewing in New England. It goes all the way back to the Pilgrims in Plymouth. And you write that, in fact, the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth because they were low on beer.
Yeah, that's in their records. They were sailing around Cape Cod Bay, and they were running low on supplies. And one of their crucial supplies was their beer supply, and they had to stop.
They had to stop because can't go on without the beer.
That's right. Time to plant barley.
And one of the points you make early in the book in your chapter called Water is that back then beer was considered much healthier to drink than water, right?
Right, right.
Because?
Water was essentially a biohazard back then. modern sanitation was still many centuries away, and the water sources were often polluted and could really make you sick or even worse.
Whereas beer, which is mostly water, is made from water that's been boiled, so it was considered safer, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So who drank beer back then?
Everyone. Even the children.
Even the children.
Yeah. They would drink a weaker beer. Mm. But it was really the only thing to drink at the time that the New World was settled. There was no coffee or tea yet. People didn't drink juice or milk.
There was one recipe in there, and this was early on in the book, where you talked about a recipe that involved molasses and potatoes.
Yeah, that was in The American Frugal Housewife. I don't know what the potato was for. I wish I could tell you. But molasses was a very important raw ingredient for beer in the 1700s and into the 1800s. We did grow barley in New England, but not vast quantities of it. And we did have vast quantities of molasses from the Caribbean shipping trade. We made rum out of a lot of that molasses, but we also made beer out of it.
You write that the English began brewing here as soon as they set foot on these shores, and that by the 1600s and the 1700s, New England had more taverns than any other part of British North America. And you answer this question that I'm going to ask, wasn't this at odds with the Puritans, who were all about, you know, not having a good time?
Yes and no. The taverns were very important cultural and economic and political institutions. They were the center of civic life. So there would be a church and there would be a tavern, and they'd often be right next to each other. Mm. The church is obviously where people met and worshipped, but the tavern is where they conducted business and politics, you know, before our institutions were built. So a tavern, the tavern served many purposes, including providing a reliable source of beer, which the Puritans were definitely beer drinkers. They were Englishmen, and they loved their beer. The Puritans believed that if you made good beer available at a decent price, then people wouldn't be tempted by liquor.
By liquor, I see. So better a beer buzz than a full on liquor binge.
That's right. That's right. But the Puritans went back and forth a lot on, yes, we need more taverns to supply more beer, and oh no, now we have too many taverns, too many people are getting drunk. So there were a lot of back and forth.
There was a great detail in your book that you write that, in fact, the Massachusetts Bay Colony General Court actually took towns to task for failing to establish a public house.
That's right.
So tell us what happened to the town of Concord, which apparently fell out of line with this edict or directive.
Yeah, I mean, the Massachusetts Bay authorities contacted the people in charge in Concord and said, hey, you've got to find a respectable man of the town, and that person has to open up a tavern.
I was also really intrigued to learn that unlike today, where brewing beer is perhaps usually associated with men, back then the principal brewers were women.
Right.
How did that come to be?
Well, it was a household task going back centuries before. In Great Britain, women did the brewing. They were called brewsters. And they would brew for their families, and sometimes they would brew commercially. And that was true in the New World, too. We had housewives brewing beer for their families. And there were also women. I talk about one of them in the book, Sister Bradish of Cambridge, brewed beer for the Harvard students. Mm. She baked bread, and she made penny beer.
Mm. And this was okay with Harvard?
Yes. And in fact, some Harvard students would pay their tuition in barley and wheat. So that's how much of a staple beer was.
Okay, so there's this great New England tradition of beer brewing dating all the way back to the Puritans. So bring us forward to today. What's going on today? You describe what sounds like a kind of renaissance in small craft brewers.
Yeah, it's a renaissance for sure. I mean, it really started in New England in the 80s with people like the D.L. Geary Brewing Company in Portland, Maine, and also Sam Adams and Jim Cook. But we're kind of experiencing a new wave in the last few years that's just been explosive. We have over 200 and counting breweries around New England. Many of them are very small, and they're serving really just, if not their one little pub where they're brewing, then a very small area around their community.
Now, there was, you talked about that sort of first explosion of craft brewers. It seemed to sort of die down at the end of the 20th century. Now they're coming back. What explains this second renaissance, if you will?
There's a new generation of beer drinkers who grew up with craft beer. Mm-hmm. They know what an IPA is. They know what a stout is. And they know what different kinds of hops are. Their palates are much more educated than the first wave of consumers during the first wave of craft beer.
All right. Well, here in the studio, let's introduce a couple of New England brewers who are part of this craft brewing tradition. Dan Paquette and Martha Simpson Holly are the owners of Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project, based right in my hometown of Somerville. Welcome to you both.
Hi, thanks
Thank
for having
you.
Us.
So, as you heard, as Lauren was saying, you're part of this long 400-year-old tradition of brewing in New England. Does that mean something to you?
Sure. it's the fact that it's still going. You know, we didn't mention that there was a 13-year break at some point there, right, in the last century. But the fact that it's still going and that we've got the drinkers, we've got the crowd back to actually enjoy these beers is really exciting.
Yeah. Well, what inspired both of you to get into this? Because one of the points that Lauren makes early in her book is this isn't a craft that necessarily makes people millionaires overnight. I mean, you've got to have real passion for this.
You absolutely do. Dan started brewing when he was 22, I think, which is quite a long time ago for those of you who can't see him. So he's been brewing professionally for about over 20 years. And it's certainly true that you don't make a fortune generally by being a brewer. And that's one of the reasons that we ended up renting space for our brewery, because we couldn't afford to build one because Dan's been a brewer.
I see. So that's it. That's the way you brew today, with rented space.
We do, yeah. I think it's a fairly unusual model, but we've made it work. And we rent space down in Westport at Buzzards Bay Brewery.
Hmm. You started this brewery back in 2008, Pretty Things, with your life savings. According to what Lauren wrote, that was about $8,000, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Was there a feeling of like, oh my God, if this doesn't work, then what do we do?
Yeah, but we failed at so many other things that it wasn't such a big. We knew that we could bounce back and do something. Martha was a scientist, so we moved back from England, where we had been brewing and working, to Boston. And as soon as we landed, she got a job the next day at a lab. And she said, it's go time for you to start your business, because this is going to turn into IKEA furniture if we're not careful, you know. And lo and behold, a year later, I hired her away from her scientific career, which is fantastic.
Lauren, you write, you have a section in your book about Dan and Martha and Pretty Things. What impressed you about their operation, or describe where they fit into this tradition of local craft brewers?
Well, mostly it's the quality of their beer. It's delicious. And also, Dan has been brewing in New England for a long time, and he has a keen interest in the historical aspect of brewing, and that comes through in a lot of his beers. They have a sort of I think I say in the book, an old world meets new world quality. Mm. And I think that's very New England. And I think that's, you know, just emblematic of what Pretty Things is doing overall.
Yeah. I'd love to ask you, Dan and Martha, what you think is behind this local beer renaissance. What's happening out there? What's the beer scene like out there in your view?
Well, boy, there's so many excited people who really, it's their main form of entertainment is finding new beers to drink. It's the same way that kids would go to record stores, you know, maybe 30 years ago, 40 years ago, I can't remember. you know, that sort of excitement, that sort of daily participation in a local sort of scene, that's sort of what's keeping this going and keeping new bands coming to the market all the time. You know, new breweries, they're almost like garage bands now. They're so small and funky that all you needed, you know, in the 60s was a Fender guitar and your granddad's, you know, little amplifier. I guess this is the same sort of thing. You need a 10-gallon pot and a federal license and off you go.
Again, I was intrigued by a fact that Lauren put in her book that craft breweries represent about 10% of the total beer industry.
Sales.
Mm-hmm. Sales. Mm-hmm. So that suggests that there's an awful lot of room to grow. Let me start with you, Dan and Martha. Is there a risk that if all of you guys get too successful and grow too quickly, that we'll sort of lose what's special about this craft beer movement?
I think there's all kinds of different beers for all kinds of different people. Some people do just want something cold to drink on a hot afternoon, and that's totally fine. We're very lucky in that the craft beer drinker is sort of a growing population, and people are getting more and more enthused and excited. But I think there'll always be room for all kinds of beer. And yes, it is getting crowded out there. I mean, shelf space is limited, mm-hmm. and there's only so many craft beers that you can cram into the craft beer section. But there again, more craft beer shops are opening. So I think the sky is the limit. Mm.
Lauren, do you agree with that?
I pretty much do, yeah. I mean, a lot of people think we're headed for another crash like we had in the late 90s, but I think what Martha said is really important this time around. There is a lot more room to grow. There are many niches around the country that don't have a local beer and would love to have a local beer, and brewers will come in and hopefully fill that niche.
Lauren, I want to ask you a little about your own experience. I mentioned in the introduction that you brewed beer briefly. You sort of experimented with this. You've written about it. Now you've got a book about it. What has drawn you to this so passionately?
I love the taste of beer. you know, I would have sips out of my dad's can of Budweiser when I was 2 years old. So I, you know, my palate remembers those flavors. And now we just have so many different kinds of great beer that, and it is fun to just kind of go on the hunt for new ones and just keep tasting. And I mean, that's been true of me since, you know, craft beer really first came about in the 90s, you know, when I was in college. I just became enthralled by the different flavors that were out there.
And tell us a little bit about your experience as a brewer, your brief experience as a brewer.
Yeah, I was a dabbler. I was working at a desk job after college for a few years and kind of just got sick of it and wanted to try something completely different. I had been home brewing. So I decided to just go out and pound the pavement around Boston and look for apprenticeships, and I found one at the old Commonwealth Brewing Company, which no longer exists. So I did my apprenticeship there, and then I got a job as an assistant brewer at the Cambridge Brewing Company, and did that for 2 years, and it was great. But I was never destined to be a great brewer. I decided that drinking it and drinking beer and writing about it were more suited to me.
So let's come back to Pretty Things and Dan and Martha. You offer on your website beer drinkers some tips on how best to enjoy beer. It says, beer is beautiful and needs the final step to make it so, a good pour.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
and you've got some beer in
front
of us.
You want me to describe it or do it?
How about a bit of both?
Okay. So, you know, there's only so much we can do in the brewery to make the beer beautiful in your glass. That's really your responsibility. So head is the most important thing. When you have nice a head on a beer, it says you're drinking a healthy beer. Hmm. So that is sort of rule number one. Have a clean glass. Don't do the whole frat party tip on the side pour and get what we call in the beer industry a stadium pour. right up to the tippities of the glass.
You want a head, right?
Yeah, you want something that looks healthy. Right. Head, I'm sure in the days gone by, head would have been something that people would have looked for in a beer because it meant healthy.
Yeah.
You know.
Tell us about what's in front of us and what you're going to what we're going to sample here.
So we have a brand new beer actually just shipped yesterday. It's called Fringe American Pale Ale, and it's named in honor of our office in Somerville called Fringe Union. And this is a hoppy summer beer, so it's all about the Amarillo and Chinook hops. And it's a pale ale, so it's light, it's golden. You could drink this while you were mowing the lawn if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. So alcoholic content of this?
It's 5.3%.
Okay, so it's fairly sort of mellow when it comes
It's mellow, it's like mid-range, yeah.
All right. Well, we should say that we're recording this a little after 10 in the morning, so listeners, I don't want anyone to think that this is a habit, but cheers.
Cheers.
And, cheers.
Thank you all for coming in. It's really nice.
Lovely, thank you.
It's really good.
Delicious.
I love it that you're in my neighborhood. I love it that you're churning out these great and interesting beers. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us, really.
Thank you.
That's Dan Paquette and Martha Simpson Holly, the owners and founders of Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project. And Lauren Clark, her new book is Crafty Bastards, Beer in New England from the Mayflower to Modern Day. Lauren Clark, thank you.
I had a blast. Thanks.